I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, interesting show this week, Lynn. First of all, I'm going to be catching up with Alf Cantrell. Now, do you know Alf at all?
No.
Well, do you know what he does? Have you heard of him, Alf Cantrell?
No, I haven't.
He's got the Banjo Paterson Museum in Yeovil.
Oh, how interesting that will be.
Absolutely. Look, the guy is an absolute wealth of information all about Banjo Paterson. And then straight after that, we're going to be chatting with
Aidan from 7th Street Caravans.
That's correct. Now, Aidan Saggers is the owner of 7th Street Caravans in Heatherbrae, and he's going to be talking to us about his various different models and so on and so forth. And then after that, we're catching up with
We're catching up with David and Martina again as they continue along their trip.
That's right. They are doing Fraser Island, and their first part of Fraser Island was on last week's program. But so much to see and do on Fraser.
Right, we're continuing on.
We're continuing on with the journey. So, Lynn, don't forget we've got a great selection of Aussie music as selected.
That's correct, yes, we
by
do.
By the people we interview.
Yes.
So what do you think?
On with the show.
Hello, listeners. Phil C here, and I'm in Yeovil. And we are at the Banjo Paterson Museum with Alf Cantrell. Now, Alf is the curator of the museum. How are you, Alf?
Going extremely well, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us today, my friend.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. It is. It's a pleasure for us to be here. Now, we were here about two, three years ago, and I spent about 4 hours in this wonderful museum. Tell us all about the museum for the listeners that haven't been to Yeovil before.
The Banjo Paterson Museum is located in Yeovil because this is where Banjo Paterson spent his childhood.
Right.
In Yeovil, which in those days was called Buckenbach.
Okay.
And every town needs something, small village or town, to attract people to come to it so they don't die, to keep the cash flow going through the main street.
Okay.
We only have about 4 shops in the main street. And we have a lot of through traffic. But pull them up and slow them down, what can we do? So we opened a museum for Banjo Paterson.
Okay. So what would the population of Yeovil be? Because it is a small town, you said.
About 260.
About 260, okay. Okay. And so how long have you been the curator?
Since it opened, that's 7 years.
Okay. Rightio. And all the exhibits in here, did you put these together? Were a lot of things donated by local people?
Quite a few things were donated, not necessarily by locals, but the majority of them I either had or we have purchased since we opened.
Okay, okay. Now, I understand, because we were here about 2 or 3 years ago, you got a brand new bronze statue out the front, is that correct?
Yes,
Banjo Paterson?
We do have a new bronze statue. It was unveiled only 2 weeks ago.
Okay, 2 weeks ago. Incredible. Now, what about this hat across the road? Because when the day I pulled up, it was raining, and I saw this fellow, which I thought was a fellow sitting in a wheelchair in the rain. It's actually meant to be Banjo sitting there with a pipe in his mouth?
It's the swagman.
Okay, all right.
It's the swagman, Andy. Andy sang as he watched Andy waited till his billy bull. It's
Andy. Ah, okay.
Well, he's under the big Cobra Banjo Paterson hat.
He is indeed. I saw the hat as we were driving to the museum, and it was raining slightly, and from a distance I actually thought it was a real person in the wheelchair getting wet.
He doesn't talk a lot.
No.
Gosh, he's a good listener.
He's a hell of a good listener. I agree with that. So for people who come to the museum, I was here, as I said, a couple of years ago, and I spent at least 3 or 4 hours in there. What do you think the minimum time would be?
Minimum time would probably be an hour.
Okay.
The people spend in there. Some people come back tomorrow and spend more time in there, those that are more deeply interested in Banjo Paterson.
Yeah.
The majority of people are amazed at the fact that he did so many things in his lifetime. He's known as the author of Waltzing Matilda and the author of The Man from Snowy River and Clancy the Overflow. And to most people, that's the end of the Banjo Paterson story. But of course, he did so many things in his lifetime, from being a winning jockey in Sydney to working with horse-drawn ambulances on the Western Front during the First World War.
Yes, yes.
To being the assistant vet as he took the horses across, 7,000 horses, to Egypt for the Allied forces.
Yep.
To being a Boer War correspondent, to being a solicitor in Sydney for many, many years.
Yes.
captain of the Australian and the New South Wales polo team and captain of the New South Wales tennis team.
Wow, I didn't know that. I knew a lot of it, and I'm a bit of a banjo tragic myself. That was what brought us here, so I didn't realise that. Tennis as well.
Tennis, and he played a mean game of cricket as well, and golf.
Okay, all right, there you go. Well, we've obviously come to the right place to find out about Banjo Paterson, that's for sure, Alf. Now, tell us a little bit about the park that's directly opposite, because you've got several sculptors across there.
Yeah, when we started to promote Banjo Paterson in Yeovil, we ran a festival every year called the Mulga Bill Festival.
Yes.
And the Mulga Bill Festival ran once a year and attracted up to about 7,000 people.
Okay.
It was a long weekend, probably Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yes.
And but the problem was it was only once a year.
Okay.
And that was when we decided we needed something to attract people every day of the year.
Yep.
So we started off cleaning up that park opposite, which was absolutely a tip when we started. It belongs to the Lands Department.
Right.
And we mowed it and we cleaned it up and we got several grants to level it, move the rocks about and do everything there. And then every time we did something in town that raised money to improve our community, which was what the festival did, build toilets, etc., plant trees, we always left something, and we left a sculpture.
Okay.
And we had that sculpture specially made for, you know, the new year, 2014, 2015,
2016, etc. And so on, yep. Alrighty. Now, you've obviously been living in Yeovil for a little while to be the curator of the museum. Were you born here? Are you a local?
No, I'm not a local. Goodness me, no, I'm not a local.
You're not a local?
No, I've only been here for about 36 years, 37 years. And the locals don't consider that to be a local.
So 37 years. How do you become a local in Yeovil?
Well, I've always said you either have to be born here or marry your cousin.
Okay, marry your cousin. So what do the locals think about an answer like that?
Well, they're not very happy about it, but it is so true in Yeovil.
It's very humorous, Alf. You've got a great sense of humour, my friend. Now, one other thing, apart from it being a museum and an extremely interesting one, listeners, as I said, I was here a few years ago and spent 3 or 4 hours here and would have spent longer, but we just had to keep moving along. You've also got this great cafe called Clancy's. Tell us a little bit about the cafe.
Well, the cafe here, Clancy's Cafe, is purposely built in the front of the museum as part of it.
Right.
And people come, as you said, and they spend a bit of time and they might sit down and have a cup of coffee, then go back into the museum. And it's the cafe that generates the monies that pay the day-to-days on the museum, because you've charged people $3 or $5 to go into the museum. It doesn't pay for your electricity and your rates and your water, etc., etc.
Okay.
So that's the purpose of that, and we keep everything very much to a minimum. You can buy a beautiful hamburger here for $5.
Which is, and we've just had a beautiful cappuccino and some lovely scones. And great quality of food, very, very affordable for the travel.
And that Devon's UT would have cost $6.
Okay.
So
beautiful.
Good value.
Good value for money. And you've also got a great camping area down here, which is absolutely fantastic value for money. Tell us a little bit about that.
The camping area is run by the Show Society.
Right.
And it's a means of generating money for the Show Society. We were fortunate enough some years ago to get a grant to build the facilities down there, which are better than home.
Right.
And then people can come and they can stay for 1 day or 2 days or 5 days, whatever they like, and use it as their centre for travelling around or just to spend an evening in Yeovil.
Yep.
And it's on the showground. It has power, very good toilets and showers, and is an ideal place for anyone to stay.
And how much is that now?
It's only $15 a night.
$15 a night.
Regardless of how many you have.
Okay. As long as you don't bring 12 kids and 18 dogs.
Well, we'll put a stop at the dogs to start with.
Okay, fair enough.
We don't mind people bringing dogs, but there is something on our website, I think, that says 3 days maximum.
Yep.
And that's to cover ourselves to people who bring 18 dogs and 3 motor cars and just make a nuisance to themselves.
And make a nuisance and decide they want to move in at $15 a night. Showers, hot water, great facilities. tell us, lastly, that's this festival that you mentioned before. Is that still running or no?
No, it's not.
No. It's been finished up.
It has finished up, and we are now running this.
Yes.
And we the Rotary Club in Orange started then running a festival called the Banjo Patterson Australian Poets Festival.
Ah, okay.
And it's run in February every year.
Okay.
Of course, we are one of the people that voluntarily help to run it.
And yes.
We put on a function here every year.
Right.
During that festival. And we have a poetry day and a what we call a Banjo Patterson's brunch.
Okay.
We put on here every year in February.
Mm-hmm.
But the Orange, being a much larger centre than us, are able to do more.
Okay.
And they run a very big children's program for teaching and educating children on poetry every year with guest poets.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time, Alf. It's been an absolute pleasure catching up with you. Yes, I'm going to ask you now, because we're just about to wind this one up, I've got to play you a song. Now, do you have a favourite Australian singer?
I certainly do.
Okay.
Are there more than one?
Oh, well, it depends who you ask. It depends. You definitely don't look like an AC/DC sort of a man, so... Who would be your favourite, Alf?
There is only one Australian singer, in my opinion, that produces absolutely magnificent music and magnificent lyrics, and that is Slim Dusty.
Slim Dusty, definitely one of the greats, that's for sure. So what about a favourite Slim song?
Walk a Country Mile.
Walk a Country Mile. Thank you so much, Alf, for taking the time to talk to us. It's been a pleasure for us to be here and for you to take some time with us. Absolutely great. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed for coming to Yeovil. It's been a pleasure having you.
All right. There you go, listeners. The town is called Yeovil. It's the Banjo Patterson Museum. Make sure you come and talk to Alf and Alf Cantrell. Now, it's only about an hour to Dubbo or Parks from here, so even if you don't want to stay in Yeovil, it's not that far to come just for a day trip.
An hour also to Orange.
Yes.
So it's really in the centre.
Okay.
And it is... by far the nicest facilities in all of those areas.
Well, there you go, folks. You got it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Alf Cantrell, Banjo Patterson Museum. We're going to be back with more Roman Oz straight after that song, Walk a Country Mile.
Well, I've walked a mile or two in my lifetime, and I've traveled down some muddy tracks and dry. 'Cause if I wanted to get where I was going, I knew I'd just have to walk that country mile. Now a country mile would be the longest distance a man could ever travel when he's down. And you curse the never-ending road before you when you think you'll never make it into town. But you meet a friend or two along the highway, and you learn a lot you never knew before. And if the journey takes a lifetime when you thought a year or two, well, you just don't give up easy anymore. And I've walked a mile or two in my lifetime, and I've traveled down some muddy tracks and dry. 'Cause if I wanted to get where I was going, I knew I'd just have to walk that country mile. Walking that long mile has shown me changes, changes in the people and the land. But I'll bet the road to Marble Bar's no better than when I drove with trucks and caravans. And the country bloke is still the same old battler, no matter what the place he's working in. And although I've covered many miles, I still can't wait to see what the next country mile will bring. Well, I've walked a mile or two in my lifetime, and I've traveled down some muddy tracks and dry. 'Cause if I wanted to get where I was going, I knew I'd just have to walk that country mile. Yes, I knew I'd have to walk that country mile.
With overseas travel in lockdown, there's no better time to see what's offering in your own backyard. And if you want to do it in style, with all the bells and whistles, then 7th Street Caravans, located at 2212 Pacific Highway, Heatherbrae, is where the journey begins. Check out their range, Paramount, Silver Valley, Road Trip and Option RV. With dozens of layouts, there's something for everyone's needs. 7th Street also has a large range of pre-loved vans. They won't be beaten on price, so grab yourself a knockout deal today. Phone Aidan and the team on 4987 5288 or check out the website 7thstreetcaravans.com.au.
Hello listeners, this is Phil C and you're listening to Roaming Oz, and we are currently at 7th Street Caravan Yard here in Heatherbrae with one of the owners, Mr. Aidan Saggers. How are you, Aidan?
I'm very well, thanks Phil.
Thank you, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh mate, it's my pleasure. I want to find out all about this incredible caravan yard you've got here in Heatherbrae. Now, I understand it's a family-owned business.
Yes, it is.
It is?
It's my wife and I own it.
Yes.
She's the boss.
Okay. That's a good rule. Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah, that's the way.
Okay. So it's just you and your wife?
Yeah, it's just my wife and I.
Okay. Yeah. So how long have you been in the RV industry?
Well, it's funny that, isn't it? 1978. Wow. I actually started. That's way back in Melbourne.
Okay.
That was my father and uncle.
Okay.
They were building vans back then.
Right.
So I started off cleaning them right back then. I was only 16.
Wow.
So, but I never actually worked in the industry. I always had it as a part-time.
Okay.
Because I was part of the family.
Yep.
I was in the bank for a long time.
Okay.
Had landscape gardener. So I've done a few jobs, but say, around in the 90s, I got in full-time into the caravan industry.
Okay.
And I've just seen it blossom from there. So
absolutely.
It's really come on.
Okay. Know. So you would have seen an awful lot of changes in the caravan industry since then.
Yeah.
I mean, back then, if you had a shower and a toilet, you were considered king of the kids.
Well, you were, yeah. You know, back early 2000, even back in 2000s up to about 2004.
Right.
The most popular selling van was a 16-foot pop top, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it just progressed from there. It's funny, you know, you look back then,
mm-hmm.
and caravans were sort of a bit of a daggy sort of holiday.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas now it's the trend.
It is.
And
it is.
You only got to look at the vans. They're like apartments.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, they do. They cater for everyone's needs and everyone's tastes, don't they? I mean, you can get absolutely anything in a caravan.
Yeah.
I mean, and nowadays, standard equipment with the caravan's a washing machine. I mean, that was unheard of in the 90s, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't find a van, even a second-hand one with that.
Okay.
Even up to early 2005 or 6 when they started putting them in then.
Okay.
Yeah, before that, it was very rare.
Very rare.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, people are spending more and more time on the road now, aren't they? So they do want these comforts.
Yeah, they do. And it's probably more self-reliant and not going to parks. They're free camping.
Yes.
So that's, you know, they will use equipment like that.
Of course.
A lot of the caravans now are built for that with solar and batteries and bigger fridges and the list goes on.
So what's probably the most popular style of caravan you sell? Because you sell everything from, a tiny one to a big, huge family van.
Yeah, well, true. Like, there's a family market where you got the full ensuite, the bunks.
Yes.
A lot of young families are getting into the market. And it's funny, like years ago, like from my era and beyond, it was – we'd start off with a camper and then a camper, then a pop top, and then a full van with a shower if you're lucky.
Yep.
And then one with an ensuite. So you take about five or six vans to get to that one that you really wanted.
Yes.
Not these days. It's straight into the top, off-road family van, 80-odd grand, gone.
With all the bells and whistles.
And they want it now.
And they want it now. And that's the difficulty, isn't it? Because at the moment with overseas travel in the lockdown, I guess supply and demand is a little difficult, but
it is.
It is.
Yeah.
Now you've got five different manufacturers that you work with.
Yes.
Okay. So
some of them, obviously the most popular ones, the popular as in what, you know, people want, there's a bit of a wait.
Yeah.
But you've got some out there. You can turn out a brand new van this year.
We can.
Okay.
We're only one of the few. I've done a lot of homework. I could see what was happening.
Right.
Vans we've been taking to shows and had on display here, we've gone right into next year with deliveries.
Yes.
And luckily back then, like over 12 months ago, I was sourcing other companies.
Correct, yep.
Because I knew there'd be a shortage.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, luckily it's fallen my way. We've picked up Hurricane RVs.
Right.
Now I've got stock ready and available to yep. sell.
Yes.
And I can order, even take an order this year, which is very rare.
Yes. And supply it this year.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is rare, isn't it?
Cause absolutely, yeah.
I think I heard one of the other manufacturers, and I won't put yeah. one against the other, but some of them have got two-year waiting lists.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's 2 years. Absolutely it's, ridiculous.
It's hard because the pressure's on the manufacturers at the moment because we're giving them the orders
mm-hmm.
and they're struggling to get them back
struggling
out.
Struggling to so get them out, yeah.
I think it'll work itself out, but at this stage you've got to sort of live for now and – you know, people are coming in
yep.
unaware of how far they've got to wait for a caravan.
For a caravan, yeah.
You know, when you tell them 12 months, you can see them virtually walk around and go back out again.
You know? And the nature of the beast at the moment. But you do have a range of really good pre-loved vans here too. So yeah. if somebody wanted a van, bang, straight away, you got a good
stock. Oh, yeah.
You got
There's
a good
stock. Second-hand stuff,
yep.
stuff here.
Yeah.
I think because we had the storage, some people aren't using it and just, you know, we'll sell it for them.
Yes.
So, you know, it gives us stock, more stock in the yard to sell. It gives more customer choice when they come in.
Yeah. So this one that you can take an order for and have out by Christmas. Now, this is one of the new manufacturers that you've gone into business with.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that? Because I've had a look at it.
Yeah.
And price to sell.
Oh, yeah.
Really price to sell. Features and really price to sell. And you've got family vans in that same manufacturer?
I've got five here.
Yeah.
Two of them are family vans.
Okay.
And I know they're hot property at the moment, the family vans.
Yes.
The Rear Club Lounge is another really good seller.
Okay.
That's a 22-foot.
Yep.
It's like their top of the line.
Yes.
And I've got a little single axle. So that's another good seller too, little single axle off-road caravans.
Yes.
It's another good market.
Okay.
So, you know, and in between that, we've got the 20-footer off-road one. They're all off-road.
Mm-hmm.
They're all popular makes and those models, they're all popular.
Okay.
So
it's
good to have them in stock because they're ready to go, you know.
Straight away.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. So I guess with everything becoming more and more expensive, people will be leaning more toward the off-road style of vanning, wouldn't they, where they've got the solar and the grey water and they can camp off-grid and not have to pay. Because some of the caravan parks are really taking advantage of travellers, aren't they, some of them? Well,
you'd know more than me.
Absolutely.
Being a caravan.
Absolutely.
I mean, I could sell them and recommend and do everything like that, you know, and we do a little bit of caravanning.
Yes.
Probably less now than what we used to do.
Yep.
But, yeah, you're full on. You're out there.
Well, I'm out there and I'm doing it, obviously. Yeah. But from a seller's point of view, are you finding people buying more the off-road style of van as opposed to the touring van? Because there's a bit of weight difference, isn't there?
See, Silver Valley, we sell a lot of touring vans.
Okay.
And like I said, look, it's sort of not one cliche in the market. It's different.
For everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the off-road, on the on-road market.
Yes.
We sell a hell of a lot of them, you know,
okay.
where people, you know, they're not going to do the off-road. They'll go to parks and, you know, probably a little bit of corrugated roads, but that's as far as they'll go.
Yeah.
And that suits them down to the ground.
Yes. You know,
they don't want the big, high, heavier sort of van. So they want something lighter that they're comfortable towing, happy to have a little holiday or, you know, they go everywhere in them anyway. So.
Yeah.
But, that's a good market. Paramount's pretty similar. It's like a semi-off-road that we've got here.
Yes.
That's another brand that I've got available.
Yes. So you got a few of those you can...
Yeah, I've got four of those in stock.
Okay.
Where Paramount knew what was going on. Had a bit of a chat to the owner down there. And all of a sudden, four vans arrived. I thought, fantastic. You know, so they're ready and waiting to go out as well.
Okay.
So we've got a few here that, you know, people come here, they can drive out with a van. So
from what size smallest to largest have you got that can just people could just come in and go, oh, I'll have that one?
Yeah, 18 footer.
Yep.
Which is a single axle.
Okay.
So I've got one in a like a touring van and an off-road van.
Okay.
Right up to say 22'6".
Okay.
Which is the rear club.
That's the bigger one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's getting up there. That's fairly heavy. So you'd need a pretty substantial vehicle to pull that style of thing.
That tier weight is around 2750, I think it was.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, so you want something that can tow up to 3.5 ton comfortably.
Yep. Very good.
Yeah.
And is it more families now? You said the families are getting into it, or is it more the really grey nomads?
Yeah, the grey nomads have always been there.
Okay.
And a lot of them are selling. They're getting into the market, but they're already in it, a lot of them, and they're just trading.
Yeah, so they're up.
Whereas the families are new.
Yes.
They're getting into it for the first time.
Yep.
But saying that, I mean, a lot of people would travel overseas where they can't.
Yes.
So they are getting into it. You know,
fantastic.
Now's their first time. You know?
Okay. And and you've got a great business here. This is Heather Bray. What's your address?
2212
Pacific
Highway in Heather Bray. So if you're past McDonald's, past Bunnings, and then we're right next door.
That's coming south. And of course, if you're going north, it's before that, listeners.
Yeah.
And of course, if you want to find out anything about your range.
Oh, look, jump on our website.
Yes.
That's 7thstreetcaravans.com.au.
Right.
So that's with a number 7, TH, street, the full word.
Okay. 7, number, TH, street, full word,
Caravans.com.au.
Yep.
All our products are on there.
Okay.
Have a look, and if you see something you like, give us a call.
Okay.
And one of our passionate team members will help you out, no doubt.
Well, look, that's the other thing I wanted to say. You've got a great team here.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
they really
are. And they really bend over backwards to help.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of our staff, they've... it's funny, all our salespeople have come up through the workshops.
Right.
They know what they're talking about.
Correct.
You know, that they can recommend and know when people want something. They know what they're on about.
They know what they're talking about, yeah.
And that really helps when you're selling.
Yes.
Because nothing worse when you're trying to buy something and every time your person doesn't know.
Yes.
And you've got to go ask someone else who does and they're going back and forth. No, our guys, and they're passionate. They love what they're selling.
Yes.
They're confident. We back the product. Anyone who buys a product from us, as long as they service it with us, we do a 5-year structural warranty on that product.
Yes.
So it just gives you that peace of mind.
So as long as they get regular maintenance and regular servicing means they get that 5-year warranty with you. Fantastic.
Which is a bonus, you know.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Mate, it's been fabulous talking to you, Aidan. Oh,
pleasure.
You've got a lot of great stock here, so there's no reason. If people want to come out and get a brand new van, you can supply them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing.
I'll just go through some of the brands we've got.
Yeah, do that, please. Yes. Yeah,
all right, so we'll start off with the Option RV.
Yes.
It just won the People's Choice Award up in Brisbane.
Wow.
Which is Australia-wide.
Okay.
One of the best products we've probably had at 7th Street.
Okay.
Very high in quality, and the company is one of the best you could deal with.
Well, it's a family owned business as well.
That's another family owned business.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And manufactured in Australia?
Manufactured. All our products are manufactured in Australia.
Yes, yes.
So that's Option RV.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're limited in the range we can display on a lot of these.
Yes.
If it was a normal year, I'd probably have about 10 or 12 of them in
different
stock.
Models.
We're lucky to hold on to 3. So I've only got the distinction models.
Yes.
He is working on trying to get me some stock, but because customers are sort of further behind, we're putting them in front.
Of course. So makes sense.
Yeah. And now we've got, what else? We got Paramount, where I do the Signature Series.
Yes.
They're all here on display and have a look at.
Mm-hmm.
Paramount do have a wide range, but in the same boat again, where you can't have everything.
No.
You know, of all their products.
Yep.
We're lucky to have the Signature range that they've sent us.
Okay.
Silver Valley. They've got some on-road touring vans here. We've got 4 on display, and they're fantastic. They meet the market head on, and their prices are great. Their quality is fantastic.
Yep.
Their after service is fantastic too. So,
okay.
We got the Sahara Road Trips.
Yes.
Price wise, they're fantastic. Their quality is great, and we've only got the 2 models left. One's a family, which is very popular, and one is the off-road. Package that we've put together.
Okay.
They're great quality. And Hurricane RV is the latest one that we've got on board.
Well, that's the new one, isn't it?
I've been researching over a year now, so now it's all come to light and it's come at just the right time.
Absolutely.
And it's left us room to move where we can sell the stock and you know, get some orders in before Christmas if you really wanted something special.
So how many models do they have? You've got the family one, you've got an off-roading.
They've got a bit of a range. They've got from 18 foot up to 22 foot six, okay. And there's different layouts. I've got four of their layouts here.
Okay.
You'll find generally out of that four is what people would go for. But if you see a nine, you know, something, we can, that's where you talk to one of our staff and we can organise something there.
Yep. Yeah, because they've got different floor plans, so you'd be able
different floor plans and different models. Different. But we've sort of based it all on the off-road one that they do.
Yes.
If you come in and talk to us or have a look at our website, you will see.
Fantastic.
What we can do.
Absolutely brilliant.
No worries.
Thank you much, Aidan. Wonderful stuff. Now, before we finish up, matey, I've got to play you an Aussie song. Have you got a favourite Aussie band?
I've got a couple.
Okay, well.
How many can I?
hang on.
How about we start with this one?
Okay.
Skyhawks.
We've got
Living in the 70s.
Living in the 70s.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can play that for you, Aidan. Not a problem. You know that 90% of that album back in the 70s was banned on commercial radio. Yeah. Did you know that?
Well, now I can finally get to hear it.
You can finally get to hear it. And I've got to tell you, Michael Gudinski said that's great that the commercial radio doesn't want to play it because the listeners wanted to hear it.
Yeah.
And he said the only way they're going to hear it is if they bloody well go out and buy it. The album.
And it worked. Yeah.
And it worked. So we're going to play that for you, Aidan. Living in the 70s by the Skyhawks. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Phil.
Okay, listeners, stick around for that. And straight after Skyhawks, we'll be back with more Roman Oz.
Scoop!
Evans, what a great song, Living in the 70s, from the debut album of the Skyhooks, came out in 1974. Great song selection there by Aidan, and seriously, folks, if you are interested in buying a new caravan or a really good pre-loved second-hand caravan, that is the man you need to see, okay? Aidan Saggers, he's got a great team out there at 7th Street, Heather Bray. We're going to be back now with more Roman Oz. We're catching up now with David and Martina on Fraser Island. So what else did you do on Fraser?
Yeah, Fraser Island. Well, what did we do? We stopped in another camping spot, which was called Ocean Lake. There's a beautiful lake there, toilets, very clean, flushing toilets. We stayed there for another two nights, and then obviously all the way up to the top to Sandy Cape.
Yep.
Where the lighthouse is. So you drive to the Sandy Cape and then you walk to the lighthouse, which is about a 45-odd minute walk. Quite a steep hill up, but then, you know, you get to walk back downhill again, which is a lot easier on the way back down.
Yes.
And from there, we drove all the way back about halfway down the island to do some inland tracks. And we had a spot recommended to us, which, you know, I've recommended this to so many people that are looking at doing Fraser Island, and I hope your listeners, if they're looking at going to Fraser Island, a place called Awinya Creek.
Okay.
It's on the west side and it is absolutely stunning. It's very remote, so there's no shops around that side.
Yep.
And no toilets, no nothing. You have to be quite self-sufficient.
Yep.
But you're on the west side, you're facing west, that you get these mango-coloured sunsets every single night.
Oh, wow.
There's no wind as there is on the east side. There's no waves. There's no currents, so people were swimming inside in the water. You know, I was swimming, sort of bathing. You know, you wouldn't go too far out, but it was absolute bliss. White sand, hey Martina, it was.
Yeah, because you had the ocean, and behind us there was a creek.
There was a freshwater creek
so
behind us.
So you could rinse yourself, and when you were swimming in the ocean as well, so that was really nice.
It was stunning, and we couldn't get enough of it. We were supposed to stay 2 days, and I think we stayed three out of all them over there.
Okay.
Because the eastern part of Fraser Island is a bit windy.
Right.
Because you get that ocean breeze. And
Yeah, it's constantly windy on the eastern side. You've always got some sort of a breeze, pretty strong breeze or a strong wind, but the east side was calm. The ocean was just crystal clear, glass. It was just fantastic. We loved it.
Wow.
So from there, we sort of drove down, hey, and we checked out Lake Mackenzie.
Yes.
Yeah, we checked Lake Mackenzie. That was really beautiful. The water was crystal clear and just so blue.
That's, I think it's rated the number one lake in Australia. So,
okay.
And it's for a reason. You know, when we got there, you're sort of standing there in awe, just looking at this lake going, wow, what a beautiful natural lake, you know, and it's crystal clear and fresh water as well. So, that's definitely on the to-do list, you know, if people are visiting Fraser Island.
Okay. So when you said you were on Fraser for 7 days or nights or something?
Eight days. Yeah.
So if you had your time again, because we know you are doing the big lap, so, I mean, if you had your time, what would you recommend to people if they're going to go to Fraser? I mean, obviously they're not going to go there for 1 day. You were there 8 days. Was that sufficient or do you think people should take longer?
Minimum eight days.
Wow.
So really have a look at, you know, there's across the island, there's about, I think, 40 lakes, you know, you can't get to all of them, but there's, you know, Lake Mackenzie, you can spend a whole entire day there with the family, swimming, driving around the inland tracks. Most of them take about a good half to three quarter day to do, you know, to really have a look around.
Yes.
8 days at a minimum, and I think 10 days is quite good, don't you think?
You can spend on west side, which is this Awinya campground. You can spend there like 7 days, easy.
Yeah, you can explore around there. Yeah, there's so many little spots. And what else is there on that one? There's the central station as well. That's another camping area in the middle.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think 8 days, 8 to 10 days is quite a good time, but I wouldn't do any less than 8 days.
8 days,
Some people go for 3 days, which is, I think, like, very little. Because you pay so much money for the bar.
Yeah.
So you want to, like, take your time there.
Of course.
Actually enjoy.
Believe it or not, we've actually met two separate people that have only done a day trip onto the island, you know, gone there for one night and come back off. And they said, oh, it was beautiful. I said, oh, you know, you've got to see all the sights on Fraser, you know. It just keeps getting better and better. As you drive north, it just keeps getting beautiful. Sandy Cape, once you get up there, it's just a different world, you know, the big, huge sand dune, and everything completely changes. But there's dingoes all around, but, you know, none of them are very aggressive and whatnot. They sort of come and have a look, and if they realise they can't get anything from you, be it food, then they just sort of mosey on, they wander off.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw dingoes nearly every single day. We had a dingo come up to our my table as I was preparing dinner, you know. We didn't even realise, and his head just poked over the end of the table, and I thought, oh, crap, you know. Like, it's not something you expect at 8 o'clock at night, just is the dingo's head pop out. But as soon as he realised we weren't going to give him anything, he went off the road and disappeared.
Yep. So how much is the barge? Because Martina just said it's so much to take the vehicle across. Obviously, you wouldn't do it for a day. How much do they charge for the barge, for the vehicle? Is it based on the size of the vehicle? Like if you're taking a trailer on, is it bigger than or more expensive than just the car? How do they work that for the listeners?
Well, the trailer, we're not sure because we don't have a trailer, so I didn't even look at that one, but it was $160 return.
Okay.
Yeah, it was $160 return, which is a bit of money, but it's still quite fair, I think.
Yeah, I think it's different. When you go from Rainbow Beach or from Inskip...
There's two different ways you can get onto it. What Martina's saying, you can go from Inskip and then...
You go from
Kingfisher Bay, yeah. Kingfisher Bay, and that takes you across to Harvey Bay. So... that's a lot longer ferry, though. I think that's about a 1.5 to 2 hour ferry, and that one costs about $160 one way.
Wow.
Whereas the other ferry, I think, is around $160 return.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're going to spend $160 to get there and back, you're not going to want to do it in 1 or 2 days.
Exactly, yeah.
You really have to make it pay to be justifiable.
You make it worthwhile and justifiable for the cost, but also... You know, I think whilst you're there, whilst you've already made the trek from wherever you're coming, whether you're coming from Victoria, New South Wales, Western Australia, I think you sort of owe it to yourself as well to spend a couple of extra days and really see everything that's on the island, because there's some beautiful, beautiful spots. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say we spent 2 or 3 days there and we missed out on Lake Mackenzie or Sandy Cape or, you know, going somewhere or even the East Coast. Some people don't even go to the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like I said, I can't recommend the West Coast enough. It was really, really good, especially if you've got kids, you know, because you can't swim on that East Coast. And, and a lot of kids, you know, are just attracted to the water, especially when it's warm. But if you're on the East Coast, then, you know, you could see... as we drove down the west coast there, then, you know, you could see kids sort of playing in the water with their parents and whatever. So, really, really well worthwhile going across there. The tracks are not that great, you know, the inland tracks.
Yes.
They are quite rough, very sort of deep holes and long, big and deep corrugations. So your car's sort of going left and right and left and right and left and right, you know.
Yes.
And it's for a good hour and a half to drive across, at least. So, but again, very well worthwhile.
Very well worth it. And just take your time, deflate your tyres, take your time. And enjoy the ambience of the place.
Absolutely. And I think that's the key, you know, just to take your time and just take it all in. There's so much, you know, it's amazing that on the island you can be on a sandy dune, you can be on a beach, a gorgeous beach, and within 15 minutes you're in a tropical, almost a tropical rainforest, you know, which is inland. So it's amazing to actually read some of the history cards that are, you know, placed across the whole island, and to see that this is the biggest sand island in the world.
Yes.
And essentially it is just that, just sand. And you get such a different environments just on this one small island, from, like I said, beaches to sand dunes to rainforests to pine forests that are actually on there as well. So it's just amazing as you drive through, just watching it, how quickly it does change.
Well, look, I've only been there for a day or two, and when I was passing through, and you've got me jealous, guys. Next time we go that way, I'm going to have to give myself at least 10 days, I think, to take in the ambience of the whole place. Now, whereabouts can we expect to find you guys in the next couple of weeks? Where are you heading from Fraser? Just to give us a bit of a taster so you can give us an idea where you're likely to be.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, the sights are going to start getting really, really, really good from here because we'll be aiming for my favourite, my place where I've wanted to go for a very, very long time is the Bundaberg Distillery.
Oh, Bundaberg. Oh, now you've hit the nail on the head. Look, I've been there several times. You've got to do the Bundy tour. And they sell, if you like your rum like I do, David, there's rum there you can only buy there. They don't sell it to the shops. So if you want something special, that's the place to go. Now, what about you, Martina? Do you like the idea of a rum, or are you just going to let Dave loose in there like he let you go at the beer tasting?
Yeah, I'm just going to let him to do his own thing and I'm going to be a driver for that day.
That's a very good idea, guys.
So, it's a great agreement, and I jumped on board when Martina suggested this one. I said, I will take that.
Somehow I think you've come out on top, Dave. I think I'd much rather be sampling Bundaberg's wares than the brewery in Byron Bay.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so
from there, we're just heading north and then heading, you know, we're checking out some beautiful spots along the way. Anything from Mackay. You know, we want to head inland from Mackay a bit. There's a couple of valleys and waterfalls that we want to check out. Mm-hmm. 1770 Agnes Waters, and just working our way to Airlie Beach to the Whitsundays, which we're actually thinking about treating ourselves a little bit. You know, although we are on a budget, we thought at the same time we did work our butts off for the last for the 12 or so months before this trip, and we thought we may treat ourselves whilst we're in the Whitsundays. Why not actually do a cruise? So we're looking at doing a 1 to 2 night cruise actually out through the islands and have a look at Whitehaven Beach and really sort of soak it up there, because, you know, up until now, we're sort of trying to chase the warmer weather and it just wasn't happening yet.
Okay.
So Fraser was a bit of a good one. You know, we started getting warmer, but so we're thinking now that we're heading north and going through Bundaberg and towards Rockhampton, those sort of areas, then, you know, the temperature surely is supposed to be getting warmer, isn't it?
Oh, yes. My word.
We want to ditch these windshields, you know, the jackets and the hoodies and everything and start getting into shorts and getting ready for the tip, because obviously, you know, that's along that East Coast, that's our ultimate destination. The next one after Fraser Island is to get to the very tip of the country.
Yep.
Take on board some of that red dust that you can never wash out of the car.
I don't envy you, red dust and all. I think it's a magnificent trip you guys are doing. There's a lot of people envious and jealous about it. And the best part at all for you guys is there's no timetable. There's no end date. You can just take as long as you want. And, if you spend too much money luxuriating, then you can just pick up a job here or there or something, I suppose. Martina, being a chef, you won't have any problems picking up work. And, Dave, you're pretty handy with your hands, so I think you'd be able to get sort of pretty much work as well to keep this trip going for as long as you want to keep it going.
Yeah, certainly. We've kept the sort of an eye out to, you know, for jobs along the way. Martina's always having a look, you know, what's available. And the pretty much the consensus that we've got along the way is if you're prepared to work, there's work. You know, there is work. And we want to really try some, you know, different kinds of work as well. We'd really love to get onto a cattle station, you know. I mean, I partially grew up, you know, in the Snowy Mountains on a property there as well. So, but never did any sort of mustering or any sort of those jobs. But I'm a boilermaker by first trade and in fire protection. Martina's a chef. So, you know, I think with our skills sort of combined, we shouldn't struggle to get any work. No. And even if we do fruit picking along the way, because at the moment, you know, there's no backpackers really to do a lot of those jobs. So, yeah, we should be quite all right if we need to top up the account, hey?
Well, I was talking to a gentleman today who we've going to interview for our program, and he actually wrote a book, and it's called Workabout Australia.
Okay.
Now, if you go, it's no longer in print as hard copy, but this is something that you and my listeners may not be aware of. There is, in fact, a website called Workabout Australia. Now, what you do is you it's workaboutaustralia.com.au. There's a registration fee. You pay a fee to be on that website. But then what they do is every week they will send you a newsletter of where the jobs are.
And where the jobs are available.
Correct. Whether it be from fruit picking to mustering to, you know, working as a barista or a chef. Or so for anybody that's working around Australia that's not aware of this, the book was written by a chap called Barry Bremner. And because with today's technology, people don't buy books anymore, it's now all on the internet. So Work About Australia, workaboutaustralia.com.au, pay your fee. They send you a work, an email each week with jobs available in different states and whether, as I said, whether it be fruit picking or mustering or, you know, managing a caravan park or whatever. So you get short on cash, workaboutaustralia.com.au, you will be able to find work and keep this trip going.
Yeah,
through.
Well, that sounds
good. Yeah.
We'll have to check it out. Yeah,
absolutely.
Definitely.
All right. Well, we're going to check you out in a couple of weeks. So you're expecting to get where, did you say, how far up? You're going to go to Bundaberg, Mackay?
Yeah, we'll go through Bundaberg, Mackay. There's a Pioneer Valley we want to check out as well. And then head north towards Airlie Beach and the Whitsunday. So
fantastic.
I dare say by the time we speak again, we'll be somewhere either just past or in the Whitsundays.
It sounds great to me, guys. Now, I know you're heading to the top. You're not quite there yet. You're only about halfway. We always get a song off you. What's your favourite song for this particular chat?
Well, I'll let Martina say this one because it was actually her choice because we're only halfway up the country, as you said, and we're heading to the top.
Yep.
It's a long way to the top.
It's a long way to the top. Correct. That's it.
It's a long way to the top. AC/DC, what an appropriate song for you guys. And you thought that up, Martina, did you? You're thinking we're heading to the top. It's a long way. We're only halfway there. Hey,
yeah.
that's your selection for the week?
Yeah, it is my selection.
Fantastic work, guys. Oh, I love you. I love your thinking. I really do. Look, we're going to catch up with both of you again in a couple of weeks' time. And listen, David, don't try too many of those Bundys because you definitely won't be able to drive the vehicle after their sampling. Okay, I've been there.
It'll be a
great experience.
The next day too, I can imagine.
It's a great experience, Bundaberg Factory. You can do the tour. They show you how it's all made, and just stand back in awe and see these huge, vats, and knowing that there's enough alcohol in there to. Yeah.
to feed the whole country probably for about a year, I can imagine.
Oh, yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for that. And you keep in touch. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Hopefully you'll be at Bundy.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks very much, Phil. It was great talking to you.
And you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Martina. Now, stick around, listeners. We're going to put this on AC/DC. It's Martina's selection. It's a long way to the top. They're only halfway there if you want to rock and roll. We'll be back with more Raymon Oz straight after this. We'll be right back. Oh, well, there you go, listeners. That is our program for the afternoon. What a great song chosen there by David and Martina. It's A Long Way to the Top If You Want to Rock and Roll by Australian rock band AC/DC. Now, that was the first track of the group's second album, TNT, and it was released in Australia and New Zealand back in December of 1975. Now, it was written by Angus Young, Malcolm Young and Bon Scott, and the song combines bagpipes with hard rock instrumentation in the middle section of the song. There is a call and response between the bagpipes and guitar. Now, what a fantastic song. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this afternoon's program, Roaming Oz, and don't forget, we'll be catching up with David and Martina again in a couple of weeks. They're going to be at Bundaberg and beyond. A big shout out to Alf Cantrell from the Banjo Patterson Museum in Yeovil, Aidan Saggers from 7th Street Caravans in Heatherbrae, and also the last people we had on, David and Martina.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roaming Oz.